Hello everyone, welcome to another IT Career Talk with Professionals, and today I have a founder and CEO. But before we begin, please do click that red subscribe button. So my guest today is Dan Angelo de Guzman. Hello, Sir Dan.
Hello, hi. Hi, everybody. Hi, Rafi.
Hi.
How's everything?
Right,
how's
great, everything? No, great. Going into the rainy season.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a time flies. Like it was just January 2021, and then now it's now, you know, the summer season is over.
Yes.
But I'm not sure if we even felt summer because nobody can go out anyway.
True. Just the heat of the summer.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. Yes. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Mr. Dan, no, maybe you can describe for us what a founder and CEO is, especially of CloudSwift.
Okay. So, I get that question a lot, and I think the rest of the other entrepreneurs and founders get that a lot. So, I would say, real talk, right? Mm-hmm. Founders and CEOs of a startup or technology companies that are really thriving and whatnot. Of course, it's not the same as if you are like a CEO of Microsoft or
right.
CEO of IBM or Amazon or whatever. It's not all glamour and, you know, it's not all fun and glamour. It's a combination of really dealing with the real world and making decisions and making sure that that the decisions that you make will positively affect all the stakeholders of the company. Mm-hmm. As a founder, you're not just a hired gun. You're not just a hired professional to run the business, but it is your business. It is your own company because right. You are the entrepreneur that thought of the idea to solve a particular problem that you're so passionate about. And you're basically utilizing and taking advantage of your skills, leveraging of your skills that you're so good at so that you would be able to contribute to the solution and that problem and then build a team around the company that you'd like to address those pain points. So mm-hmm. As a founder and CEO, I would say you're expected to do everything end to end. It's not just about business management. It's not just about people management. It's all from like hiring the right people, hiring your very first person, hiring the very first resources or very first team members in your technical team or technology team if you are a product-based or a software technology company. And then at the same time, as they saying, if you are the founder during your early days, kidding aside, everyone is saying that you're the founder and at the same time you're the janitor of your company because because when you were still starting out, of course, if you were just employee number one during the time that you started, you are the ones who's actually gonna do everything, like even the ad hoc stuff, right? I mean, ordering, you know, food for people or, you know, things like that. And, you know, you don't have a secretary yet. You don't have a receptionist yet. Like you will do all of that, right?
Right.
But then again, when you grow the company more and more and, you know, more and more mature decisions have to be made in terms of hiring people, raising capital, sustaining the capital in order for you to grow the business, generating revenue, formulating business models and commercial models that would work, working with strategic partners to have an effective strategic distribution channel for your business if you need
right.
that model. And then, of course, taking care of customer, taking care of employees at the same time, because once you hire them, it doesn't stop there. You have to make sure that you keep them and you have a very good retention rate. And then you should have very good retention rate as well with customers. And then part of that is as well as strategizing together with your investors and the board that, okay, so what's going to be the best for the company? What is the exit strategy?
Right, right.
Will there be an exit strategy? Is it going to come anytime soon? Is it 18 months or 24 months down the line? What are our options? Do we do dividends first before we do exit? So all of these things you have to you have to take care. You know, as they say, as a founder and CEO, it's like you're the father of your baby, and that startup or that company is your baby. And from nourishment from that baby, as a kid or as an infant, all the way up to, like, you know, you make that investment of time and money and effort to grow that baby into like a full grown responsible person.
Right.
And now then, like, a profitable company, which it equates to like a profitable company and a responsible and smart, you know, kid or child, right? So that's how I see it.
And you've mentioned a lot of very interesting points, and I'd like to, you know, just tackle some of those in a bit. First, if you may, I wanted to understand, or, you know, ask you to share, how do you manage, you know, the decision making, especially when you mentioned, you know, there's a board, there are investors, right? And, you know, as a company, this is something like, you know, do you have to follow the board? Do you have to please your investor? You know, how do you manage the control of the direction as founder with all these stakeholders in place?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, Rafi, because I think, and hopefully for those who would have the opportunity to watch this episode, you know, if they are also entrepreneurs and founders, they would learn something from this as well. If you're the founder and CEO, you started the company, when you started getting investors into the company, of course, that's the time that you would be needing to build a structure in your business, like, as you mentioned, having that board, right? And of course, as a founder, you're one of the majority shareholders. And in fact, you should be at the very early stage, should be, you know, ideally one of the, or in fact, the highest shareholder, like in the company at the early stage.
The controlling share, or not necessarily the controlling share?
The controlling share, I would say, ideally, that should be the setup, most especially the early stage, because by the time that you come into Series A, Series B, more and more investors they're going to put more money into your business, if you know, for scale or for growth or for whatever proceeds that your investments should go to. They would like to see that the founder has the controlling and majority share of the business, because during the early stage, it's going to be hard for them to invest in a business where the founder is not fully, you know, fully compensated in terms of shares. I mean, why would you expect someone to wake up early in the morning if he's the minority and he's the one driving it as a founder, right?
Right.
So investors would be very nervous if the shares of the founder is not that significant. So that's why having that kind of structure, how you manage that is that, of course, first, of course, by the way, not all investors that will be investing in your business, it's not necessarily that all of them will be part of the board right away. It has to be significant, you know, investment or significant share for them to be part of the board. There are also structures wherein you would need to combine having board of directors, and then there are going to be board advisors and board observers, right? Wherein, even though, let's say, for example, they've invested in the company, but it's not that enough as a rule of your of having a board directors to have at least minimum of investment of XYZ. Mm-hmm. So you can actually ask them, okay, so since you're also an investor in the company, and then I value your network and I value what you can bring to the table strategically, then you can give them a board observer seat,
right?
Apart from a board director seat. So I would say how to manage that is to make sure that you hopefully form your board of directors and observers and advisors that you want to put into one place, to make sure that all of them are really going to be strategically aligned with where you want to take the company, right? Because at the end of the day, it will be you as well to drive the decisions and who would be part of the board, right? You know, it's, let's say, for example, if you're just starting out and then you had a seed investment or seed capital investor, that seed capital, the very first person that believes in you, you know, it's much easier to decide, because it's you and then them. And then you decide, okay, so how do we form the board?
Right.
And then, of course, it has to be, you know, it has to be in terms of voting and decision making, it has to be ideally odd numbers, right? 5, 3, 7, 9 people and the like. And then board observers and board advisors, you treat them as people that can actually, you know, from the board itself, advising and observing and, you know, having board meetings so that you would be able to have additional inputs and feedback. You have a third party perspective. So mostly board advisors are not necessarily people that will have shares or board, I would say independent board directors or board advisors. They're not necessarily people that would have shares in the business, because you would want the independent board directors or some board advisors to have some third party perspective that there's no bias, right? They don't have shares in the company, but they are in the industry that you're in, so that they understand more about making decisions or to understand more about, okay, so what's going to be the best discard and the best strategy to actually address this issue or address this concern, or how do we take this business to this XYZ level? So you now consult those independent board directors, and normally they're usually paid by their time, but they it's not necessarily that they have shares in the business. Now, then how do you manage that as a founder yourself? As a founder yourself is that you need to make sure that you listen, right? As a founder, as a CEO, I would say you need to be able to start thinking about, like, you have to also consider, you know, at least letting go of the ego and swallowing the pride of, like, oh, I'm the founder, I should be the only one that should be right all the time. It's not going to be the case, right? You have to listen. And you have to decide based on what's going to be best for the company by actually considering all of the decisions or all of the insights and all of the inputs that are actually being given by your board of directors. Because, like I said earlier, these guys won't be part of your board circle of board of directors if you didn't choose them as well. So it defeats the purpose of actually choosing the right board directors if you're not going to listen to them.
Right.
And then there's a structure, of course, like, you know, that will be on your shareholders exchange or shareholders agreement that says that in order for you to decide on a specific thing, that there are certain specific items that it requires. Voting rights for all of you to actually vote for. There are very, very small items that even you as a founder, you can already decide on.
Right.
Because running a business or running a tech startup, you have to really execute at a lightning speed. So you do not want to also
cause a bottleneck, right?
You don't want to cause a bottleneck. You don't want to put like an element of slowness into that as well, in terms of, oh, say I have to ask my board or whatever. Not all the time, it's not going to be the case, right? There are small things that you can already decide and think on your feet, and you should be thinking on your feet right away. And then there are things that are very, very significant and very, you know, very, very important and critical that everyone should be aligned, which is, you know, which investor or venture capital investor we should
bring in.
Who would be the strategic distribution partner in Europe, like, who's the best strategic distribution partner in Indonesia, what's going to be the commission scheme for these partners. Those things had to be reviewed, right? What is the specific discount that we should give this quarter for the customers? So those things, that, you know, financial matters, those are critical items. Compensation structure, like, how do we compensate the senior management team? How do we do appraisals for senior management team? For rank and file employees, it's all going to go through the normal performance and development plan, as you know, as you delegate to your supervisors and managers, and then for yourself as well, for people that reports to you. But maybe, you know, your own salary, for example, as a founder, and the compensation structure for the senior leadership team, I think it has to be managed and consulted with the board. So those things, you just need to know What are the small items that you can already decide on so that you don't, you know, you don't need to bring the whole gang all together? And then you need to also be aware and identify what are the critical things that needs to be consulted by the board, because as a founder and CEO, you need to learn government. You need to learn governance around that, right? You need to be able to practice that kind of relationship, because at the end of the day, in order for your business to be successful, it's you and the board would make the decisions that will help steer that direction.
Right.
Those are my thoughts around it.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about hiring, no? Especially rank and file, and even senior management.
Yeah.
In terms of hiring, do you have any particular strategy? Do you look at, you know, they come from a startup, they come from corporate, they hold maybe master's degree, certification. What's your hiring strategy?
So great question again. So hiring strategy for me, of course, obviously, if you came from a startup, I think that's a plus for me, because that means if you came from a startup, you are already familiar with how resilient you should be, how nimble you should be if you came from a startup. Because what happens is normally if the person come from a big corporate world already, from a big company already, you know, these potential candidates might already expect some, you know, some packages or some compensation, packages that would, you know, let's say for example you're hiring a sales manager, and then the sales manager would expect that there's already like a car plan, and you know, that there's already like a secretary for each of them.
Yes.
You know, so if they came from a startup, of course that's a plus. Of course, second, for technical people, for example, I don't just look at hard technical skills. I also look at attitude. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're a CTO, you know that for sure. It's not just about the technical skills. It's the attitude. Most of the time, I think the humility and attitude trumps the technical skills.
Right.
Because if the person has really great attitude, technical skills can be trained. Our technical skills can be honed, can be mentored. So I really take a look at attitude a lot. Because to be honest, as an entrepreneur, I made a lot of mistakes already in terms of hiring the bad, making bad hires, I should say. And I think it's a usual mistake we all make. And then another strategy that I look at is the openness of potential candidates, like how open they are in terms of possibly, you know, wearing multiple hats, because you'll never know when rainy day comes wherein you would really need to tightly manage everything, and you would need to probably ask some of your people to actually wear multiple hats, because, you know, in running a tech startup, like I said, you have to do everything at lightning speed execution. And that's why everyone is expected to actually put their 120, 200%, right? So if you think that the candidate is not up for that kind of challenge, then probably that's not for them, right? Because, I mean, no offense for people that would like to stay in the corporate world, but I respect that totally. I mean, there are people that are just not caught out for startups. You know, there are people that they would want to just, you know, be stable and have really, really decent, stable jobs. That's totally fine. That's their hustle, mm-hmm. right? But it's a totally different hustle if you're going to be joining a startup, most especially a tech startup, because the expectations are and the bars are high. So you don't want to waste their time. You don't want to waste your time as well. So my strategy is I somehow gauge already if the person is really up for that kind of environment.
Right.
If you feel like this person is too corporate and whatnot, I mean, then maybe, you know, these guys are probably, you know, for last considerations. But I would personally prioritize, and I would ask my supervisors and managers to prioritize people that they think would be very, very resilient, persistent, nimble enough to be more open in the kind of environment that we're in.
Right. And I guess to understand better, right, the mindset and the environment that you have built, it would be good for us to reflect on how you began your journey, right? Like, were you always sure. entrepreneurial, tech-oriented, yeah. even during high school days, right? Or even before that, now, what was your journey like?
Yeah, so it was a very, very enlightening slash fun journey so far because of all the learnings. I've never thought that I'm going to be an entrepreneur.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never thought of being an entrepreneur. I thought I was just going to climb the corporate ladder.
Even corporate was the idea for you, okay?
No, before, right? I mean, it's because I went to Mapua. I studied electronics engineering. So I'm an engineering graduate. I'm also technical in nature. So I guess that's my advantage, I would say, in running companies or running businesses, because I'm not just like, you know, I'm not just like a business person. I understand tech as well. Although I'm not like a CTO, you know, hardcore coding guy, probably like you, but I'm more of like a combination of both. After Mapua, actually before I graduated, I had the opportunity to be one of the pioneering students to be sent to Singapore for an internship in engineering for to do semiconductor. So imagine these are like laser systems that we drill down for iPads. So those are, you know, like OG moments of like of building hardware semiconductor kind of stuff. So I spent 8 months in Singapore doing that. That was like 2010 to 2011. And then I came back in Manila because while I was in Singapore, I attended a lot of seminars and sessions about cloud computing. Those were the times that the 2010, 2011 were like the heydays of cloud computing.
Right. Very early. Right. Years.
Like every. Yeah. So like, you know, there was that was the early intervention of everybody's understanding what cloud computing is. And when I attended those sessions in Singapore, you know, I was just curious, okay, so what is this cloud computing thing? Like, I haven't graduated that time. I was at my last leg of completions because that was my internship back then. And then I was curious, okay, so I want to learn more about this. And then I attended a lot of those seminars and sessions. And what I did was I realized that when, you know, after listening to these sessions, I realized that how fascinating cloud computing can be. And I just, you know, I literally just fell in love with it.
Right.
I mean, because you know, imagine like 10 years ago, you have to buy physical servers and, you know, like you have to buy these Oracle Sun microsystem servers in order for you to build applications.
Right.
Because of cloud computing, you would be able to build applications on top of the cloud, and it's more efficient, and everything is, you know, you can make things happen very fast and very cost friendly, right? So I fell in love with that, and I really liked that idea. I really liked the technology. I liked what I was hearing. And then I told myself, I don't want to be in the semiconductor industry. I want to be part of the cloud computing game, right? I want to be part of that industry. So what I did is I decided to went back to Manila. So I went back to Manila. I graduated, took my degree, certificate, and then I finished engineering, and then I needed to find a job that will help me experience more about cloud computing and IT.
Right.
So I now, that time 2011, I joined Accenture. So in Accenture, I was a technology consultant, and luckily and fortunately enough, I became one of the consulting members, or one of the technology consultant members of the cloud computing group pioneering virtualization.
Right. And did you ask for it? Like, you know, hey, it was just force of luck.
It was force of luck. And at the same time, I kind of like trying to steer myself onto it, like by actually trying to meet people that are around it.
Right.
And I kind of like I kind of like tried to really be part of that community, but at the same time, it was really like a stroke of luck when they said that, oh, they're forming a totally separate independent group that will just focus on, you know, VMware, Cisco, you know, all those boring cloud infrastructure
Yes,
stuff,
yes.
right? So, but I loved it. Like I said, I mean, I really like cloud computing, and when I learned about VMware on how it's changing virtualization and, you know, the concept of abstraction layers and all that stuff, like I just fell in love with that. And then I said to myself, like, you know, this technology can really change the world, and you know,
Right.
cloud computing can really build more companies, build more applications out there. And that was the time that while I was working in Accenture, I had this aha moment of like a happening in Accenture wherein, because one of my job, one of the tasks and one of the jobs as a technology consultant is to also develop like, you know, customized modules to, you know, to train and upskill the existing employees in Accenture Philippines for
Right.
virtualization and cloud computing.
I
So
see. So you were in charge of teaching.
I was in charge of upskilling.
Right,
That
right.
was part of our responsibilities as consultants, because we were the pioneering group in Accenture Philippines to actually start that cloud computing team.
Right.
And that's why in order for us to be able to scatter or you know, spread the good word of cloud computing, we have to build you know, presentations and training modules and programs for the other teams in Accenture on in that company to be trained on what cloud computing is and for
Right.
them to certify in VMware and, you know, particularly VMware and EMC, you know, all these stuff. Apart from like designing and implementing all that were part of that knowledge transition team. So by doing that, I've, you know, it took us 3 to 4 months. Like it was a long while in order for us to like have that idea to like, well, you know, because these are different, like very advanced technology skills, right? I mean, how would they learn if they're just gonna walk through PowerPoint slides and watch
Right.
videos or like, you know, listen to some boring lectures about it? So that's why that was the time that I had the opportunity to digitize those content or those materials that we did and we made. And then since these are technical skills, you have to have hands-on environments.
Correct, correct.
When I did that, we had to do that on a physical data center that we can find, and then we did that manually, and everything is manual, and that's why it took a while. We had to find a scrap server that we can virtualize so that we can have like actual labs for that class.
Yes.
And that was my aha moment on where probably where I am now as a tech entrepreneur, because I felt like if a company as big as Accenture is experiencing this type of problem, then probably there must be something here. Probably this is really like a problem that's been experienced across any other bigger companies or even smaller companies for training their employees. And at the same time, imagine education, right? So that was my aha moment that maybe, you know, this is something that I would want to do. Maybe I should tap into my skills and I should tap into, you know, my exposure and experience in this industry in cloud computing and in virtualization, and then see how I can build a product or a
Right.
solution that can cater to this market. And then that, you know, I didn't know anything about entrepreneurship. Like, you know,
Right.
I don't have an MBA. I don't have, you know, I don't have all these business stuff going on in me.
Exactly. It's different just to have an idea and then execute that idea,
Yeah.
right? So
Hard,
how
yeah.
did you build up your skills in terms of,
Yeah.
just having idea and then actually becoming a, I would say, active founder, right? I mean, it doesn't happen overnight.
Of course. Of course. So it was funny because the first things that I did while I was like trying to convince myself that, oh, maybe I should start something, like, you know, like of course during that time the first idea that comes into your mind is like, you know, if you want to start something, you know, you have to be like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs kind of acumen. And then what I did is I just watch a bunch of videos about, like, you know, I've learned about Silicon Valley, like what is Silicon Valley as a whole, like what it is. I've watched a lot of interviews of former founders in the US. Like, you know, that was like my poster situation, right? I mean, I to learn that kind of culture, like I studied based on, you know, those references. And I just did some research on how it can be done. And then I just stumbled upon some, you know, and this was like late 2012. Like, imagine the startup ecosystem in the Philippines itself, that time is a startup itself.
Right, that's true.
Like, nobody would understand. Like, nobody would understand if you're going to try to do a startup. Like, I mean, with all due respect, like, you know, all of the startups that we have right now in the Philippines are not even existent that time.
So probably 2015, 2016, when startups actually started. Yeah,
exactly.
Here.
So if there were OGs that time, I'm probably one of those.
Right.
And I stumbled upon, you know, and remember Idea Space, Kickstart Ventures, these guys are just starting out that time.
Yes.
I was one of those first entrepreneurs that they met, and you know, I've met with them, and then I didn't even know what to call myself that time. Like, I was just like wandering. Like, I was wondering, okay, you know, what's going on? Is there an existing ecosystem in the Philippines for this kind of, you know, what I'm feeling right now, right? I mean, I feel like I want to start something, but is there an existing community that you know, that whenever you go to that community, is there you know, that people will understand what you're trying to say, that, you know, they're not just going to tell you that you're crazy, right?
So
what I did is I sent a cold email with one of the co-founders of IdeaSpace that time, because I just really wanted to learn, right? I wanted to learn how these things are done, and then I had that idea to, you know, my very first startup back then was like late 2012. I called it Rocket Labs, so that was my first startup. And then I met with one of the co-founders. His name is Marthin Kuan. He's a totally nice guy. He's probably one of the first people that I've met in my journey. And then. From there, he invited me in Ateneo de Manila University, because there was an ongoing idea space competition happening there, like to scout for some potential ideas and startups. And then I watched the startup competition and say, okay, this is really cool, right? I mean, people are pitching, and then there are judges giving you feedback.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing. It's like joining a pageant, but it's for a different purpose, right? And then I said to myself, okay, this is pretty exciting. I think I really want to learn more. I want to delve myself into it more. And then I would say that sort of like started my network it's like a network effect. Like, late 2012, met these people, and then when you met people in that event, that will sort of like create a web of different connections, right? So amazingly and interestingly enough, I met my very first, the very first angel investor that invested in me as an entrepreneur on that event.
Wow.
So he's just an angel investor. And then he just said, you know, he handed over me his card and said, you know, call me. I think you've got something here. Like, cause I just explained everything that's on my head. Like,
right.
I didn't even have a PowerPoint slide. I don't have any fancy mock-ups or whatever.
It was like, elevator pitch.
So I just pitched him what Rocket Labs is all about and what I want to do with it. And then he said, I think you've got something there. And then that was the time that Microsoft Azure and AWS are very, very early as well.
Yes.
They were very, very early in the Philippines, and then I didn't even actually contact him right away. Like, I just, like, I waited for like a week, and then, funny enough, like, he's actually the one that actually sent me a note and said that he would like to connect, and then I sent him a note, a reply, and said, okay, let's meet. And then I met him in Starbucks, and then I just prepared some slides and explained what I want to do. And then he became like an angel investor of that idea. And then that sort of like started my journey as an entrepreneur. Like, and by the way, take note that I was still having a day job that time, because, you know, I need to juggle it.
Right.
Time. So I need to juggle it that time, because I need to sustain myself to have a day job. And then it's the same, because I wasn't sure yet what's going to happen in this idea thing, right? All throughout that journey, another angel investor came on board, a former Yahoo executive, and then he's from the US, and then he put in another investment. I mean, these investments are very, very angel funding. Like I said, I mean, these is like this is like 2012, 2013, like no investors in the Philippines at all.
Right.
Like nobody, like, you know, the Kickstarter and idea space, they're still starting out. They're still filling it out that time. There were initial investments, that's just the calibers and all these things. But those guys have been around since 2011, 2012 as well. And that time, I decided December of 2013 to quit Accenture. I had a short stint as a consultant for a big data company for like 3 months. And then 2014 of April, I met John Arok of Future Now Ventures. And then I told him about my story. Actually, that meeting was a bit accidental because I was just trying to pitch my startup to one of his companies so that one of his companies can potentially become my customer.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And then it just so happened that during that morning he was there. And then he was watching it and say, "Hey, I think you've got something. Why don't you go up and let's talk after lunch?" And then after lunch we talked, and then I told him my story. Since he knew that I wasn't really focused 100% yet on my startup, he said, "If you want to run a successful business, you have to go all in. You have to be full-time founder." So that's why he's been the one mentoring me since then. He's my mentor since then, and he decided to have me as an entrepreneur in residence in his venture capital firm, Future Now Ventures.
Right.
And then since then, my job is to just run my own startup, like, you know, no equity involved, nothing. Like, he just wants to help out and mentor me. And then I was just like kind of like learning that rope. And then 2014, unfortunately, you know, I had the worst cap table with my first startup. So many mistakes I've done, so many learnings I've learned. So when we incorporated that startup in Hong Kong, we needed to shut down that business because during that time, like, there was no really enough direction. Like, I made a lot of mistakes in terms of actually making it really work with potential investors to come in, because the cap table is not looking right. Mm-hmm. And then with the help of Future Now Ventures, they sort of like really coached me and mentored me on how, you know, on how to really deal with these type of models, right? I mean, I've learned how to negotiate cap tables. I've learned all of that, right? As an entrepreneur in residence in there. And then 2015, come 2015, I pitched my company that it is then now, which is CloudSwift. So I started CloudSwift in April 2015. My vision is to just, you know, because there's a ton of problems that needs to be solved in the education and the upskilling market. And then I said to myself, we need to build products that will address those problems, particularly on technology skills. And that was my initial vision. And then John Arok of Future Now Ventures decided to invest in CloudSwift that time as one of the seed capital investors. And that sort of like started the entire journey of CloudSwift. So we already celebrated our 6th year anniversary last April. So it was and it was a pretty fun ride. We've learned a lot, and you know, that kind of journey, like I said, from the OGs time, and you know, and there were actually OGs that time already that, you know, that we look up to, like the Dato Banatao, the Paco Sandejas, the, you know, Jay Fajardo, those guys. And then I would say we were like the second gen OGs that sort of like, I would say all of the startups that are then now that you would see a lot on Startup PH, like they're probably the third gen or fourth gen already. So that's how it is. And basically, if you notice, the happenings of where I am today was sort of like started with that network effect, right? That's why I really believe in having really, really good network.
Right.
Because you'll never know who you will meet. You'll never know who you will be learning from.
Right. And you would attribute I would say your success, how you became successful, was because of that network effect, right?
Yep, it significantly contributed, right? Absolutely. And of course, I think aside from having a good network, of course, you yourself as an entrepreneur or as an aspiring entrepreneur, you also need to learn how to use that network properly.
Right.
In business, there's also timing, right? Mm,
correct.
And then there's also right people. So you have to make sure as well, and you have to learn to make sure that you're dealing with the right people as well, because it's a very difficult world out there, right? Sometimes you can get eaten up if you don't know what you're doing, and sometimes you know, you put your trust into someone, and then unfortunately those people can't be trusted, blah, and you know, so you need to really weigh things as well.
You need to
surround yourself with people that you know that you can trust.
And so I guess at this point, I'll just have one last question, which sure. is more towards your advice, you know, advice maybe towards any, you know, could be like a ECE graduate or about to graduate, who's thinking about, you know, what's my next steps? How can I be as successful as you? Right. Or maybe think something like, you know, if you had to give an advice to yourself, mm-hmm. back when you were, you know, just about to graduate or early days of your graduation, what would be your like top, let's say, you know, top three advice?
Yeah. Number one, very important, I think, is to surround yourself with smarter people than you or better than you. You have to learn how to swallow your pride and your ego. By accepting it and embracing the fact that you would be learning more from people that are actually better than you, because at the end of the day, great companies are being built by people that are actually complementing each other effectively. You can't be the only one person that would know all this panopticon of skills that you need to do in running a startup successfully. Right. So surrounding yourself with smart people smarter people than you, and then listen to them.
Right.
Talk less, listen to them, and reflect from there. There's nothing wrong about asking questions if you need help. There's nothing wrong about listening to people that are smarter than you, that's not necessarily part of your company or part of your business. Right. So I think that's number one. Number two is, if you're a startup entrepreneur or you're an aspiring entrepreneur, I would say you need to stop chasing investors. But instead, I think your goal should be like investors, ideally, yes, chasing you or coming to you or, you know, getting, you know, wanted to get to know more of your business. Because if you keep on chasing investors, and if you keep on thinking that, you know, having a company, you know, unfortunately, some companies, they make raising capital their sort of like business model, which is sometimes it's pretty bad, right? That's just an indication that startups are really hard.
Right.
So that's why you're having focus on really getting your product right and getting your product market fit, and then getting customers, getting revenue straight, focusing on that, focusing on how you would be able to improve your gross profit margins. You know, those things, those things are sometimes being forgotten by entrepreneurs because they drink too much of their Kool-Aid, and they think that when they raise capital, that's already the only indication of success, because it's not. So I would say, don't drink too much of the Kool-Aid. It's okay to have the hype because it's part of the game, but you need to make sure that you have that focus to take the business to the next level,
right?
By taking care of customers, having that product right, product market fit, and generating revenue around that. and then achieve those targets and focus on those revenue targets, focus on those profitability targets, and then invest. You might not even need investors at all. That's the ideal, the situation, right? But because at the same time, raising capital is also hard, right? So that's my second one. My third one is that whether you're an entrepreneur or you're an ECE graduate or any graduate at all, like any college graduate or any degree, if you are also a technical professional or you're a founder or wannabe founder, or aspiring tech startup entrepreneur, I would say genius is never enough, you know.
Okay, can you expand, you know?
Yeah. Genius is never enough. It takes courage to change people's hearts, because you have to, this is just like I said, right? I mean, it's you have to always think about, like, you know, if it's having all these hard skills, or having it, like thinking of yourself as, oh, I can do everything I can, or I can do anything I can, because, you know, I'm superficial in the skills, right? I know I'm a genius in this skills, in these skills, but in life, it's a tough world out there, right? And whether you're going to be starting a company, which is, everyone knows, is tough.
Right.
It's hard to run startups. It's hard to be a founder. It's not all fun and glamour. Or whether you are a professional in a specific company, right? Whether you are a struggling student, or you are a student that is about to graduate, and then you feel and you think that you are, you know, you are the best of the best because you're a top notcher, and you think that, you know, you're the genius of the geniuses and whatnot because you've invented something and whatnot. That's not enough. I mean, in my view, that's not enough. Because in order for you to survive, in order for you to be resilient, in order for you to grasp that grit that is enough for you to be successful, it takes courage.
Right.
Because if, what will you do with all these skills if you're not cut out to experience all the pain? So if you are able to embrace those uncertainties, and you're courageous enough to face all of that, combining that with all of your fantastic, you know, genius skills, then that's going to be a powerful combination.
Right. No. And it's about, you know, like you said, applying that hard skills for change management, no? Like spreading and making sure it's adopted by others as well, no? And that takes courage.
Exactly. It's not easy to change people's minds, right? I mean, if you're in a game changing product, or if you're in a game changing world, because and then say, for example, they bought Grab, you know, Uber, these guys, like these entrepreneurs, they changed the whole game.
Right.
Yeah, it's being good in technology and being genius at, you know, in building products like that, it's not going to be enough. They have to be courageous to, you know, to work with the government,
right,
of each country, right? So because you're changing the norm, right? So combining both would really be the most ideal and the most preferred, in my view.
Right. No. And again, thank you for these top three advices that you gave. Yeah. And audience, if like you you know, you resonate, you want to have follow-ups, or you just want to, you know, share your own story, feel free to leave it in the comment section below, right? We would appreciate it. And, you know, Mr. Dan, before we close, do you have any last shout-out or last invites to our audience?
Yes. So thank you for the opportunity, Rafi. Thank you so much for inviting me. This has been fun. You know, it's always good to give back as well to the community and to the people,
right,
for them to learn more. So please check out cloudsafe.com if you want to learn more about us. If you are watching there, you're a lecturer or a teacher in an educational institution, CloudSwift has, you know, we have amazing future-ready skills platforms and customized virtual labs platform to transform your physical computer lab facilities, because, you know, nobody's going to the physical campuses anymore. So we would love to help you and solve you your problems on that one. And then we have this amazing, fantastic joint venture as well with Dito CME called Luna Academy. So if you are looking at upskilling and reskilling yourself, please go to lunaacademy.ph. You would be able to learn more about Microsoft, AWS skills, Alibaba Cloud skills, and more. And of course, if you are looking for job opportunities, we are constantly hiring. We're looking for great people, talented people to join our journey. In fact, in CloudSwift, we're looking for full stack developers. So for full stack developers out there, please reach out to hr@cloudswift.com. So perhaps Rafi can help out on the comment section, hr@cloudswift.com. For all full stack developers, the, you know, primarily Python, React.js, and more. So yeah, thank you, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity, and I hope you had fun.
Right, and thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And of course, if you like our content, don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe button, and notification bell. Yeah.